I'm Jason Klom, and this is Comedy on Vinyl. The year is 2019. The artist, Nate Bargatze. The album, The Tennessee Kid. My guest this week is Andrew Ray. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
People may know you from the Binging with Babbage series, the now Babbage Culinary Universe on YouTube. I had a feeling you were a comedy fan. I mean, I know that you're a big fan of Frasier. I want to know why you picked Nate Bargatze in particular.
Well, here's the thing. Like you said, yes, no, I'm a stand-up comedy fiend. I love it. I don't know if I can, you know, talk shit with you. First off, can I swear?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Okay. All right. I don't know if I can talk shit with you. I'm sure that you have heard much more than I have, but it's one of my favorite art forms. I think that it's such an impressive thing to be able to command an audience's attention and make them laugh. I'm not going to go too much into the weeds here, but I chose Nate Bargatze not only because I think he's one of the best stand-up comedians working right now, but also because of how I'm always impressed by clean comedy. Mm-hmm. That is not to say that I prefer or like I love filthy comedy. I'll listen to the most vile stuff on the planet, but to make me laugh without even so much as swearing, that is an accomplishment that I can count on one hand the number of comics that can do that for me, and that Nate Bargatze can do it, and you don't even realize it doesn't process with you that it's clean, like you don't even think about it.
No.
I just think that that's such a Herculean achievement as a stand-up comedian, and to just do it so effectively. Like, some of the stories that he tells in his delivery are out of control how good they are.
I was telling my wife the same exact thing, and I mean, she watches and listens to about as much comedy as I do, but I'm exactly the same way. I sometimes prefer a nice swear-filled evening, but when it can be accomplished like this, or like with a Brian Regan, I'm just like, how the hell did you do that? I can't usually be funny without a swear or two, and it's incredibly impressive. Also, to tell these incredibly, I won't say emotional stories, but loaded stories without needing that as a punctuation, because I do.
Yeah, and the other reason I wanted to talk about him is because he just put out what I might consider to be the first semi-normal stand-up special, which is not the one we're discussing. We're discussing Tennessee Kid. Mm-hmm. His most recent one, The Greatest Average American, is, I think, maybe the first semi-normal stand-up comedy special I've seen since the pandemic. Like, Dave Chappelle has put out his short pieces, but they're short pieces. You know, they're like 8, 10, 12 minutes, and they're more, I would say, I don't want to say lectures because that sounds bad. I mean, like, you know, they're talks.
Sure.
Like, they're more speeches, not speeches. You know what I mean? They're intellectual conversations,
yeah,
rather than straight up comedy. And to see a man standing on a stage with a mic in his hand in front of a crowd, albeit a socially distanced one outdoors, was kind of a shock to me. It was refreshing to see something that I've missed for so long. And so he's, I think, the first that I've seen to do that in a major mainstream format way on Netflix. I don't know if I'm misinformed, if I've missed another one, but like, that's the first I've seen.
Well, you're not misinformed if it's the first one you've seen. You've made sure to caveat it enough. That makes sense. You're the first person, though, on this podcast to pick somebody, I think, the first person to pick somebody who's been a guest on the show before. This was 9 years ago. Nate was on. But
I'm chasing him all over the place because he was the last podcast I was on was Tom Papa's podcast, and he was on Tom Papa's podcast. So I'm chasing him. I'll get him eventually.
I don't think he's that hard to nail down. I think he'd be good. This was back in the day when he picked a Seinfeld record, which I wouldn't allow anymore because it wasn't released on vinyl. But he was again, very nice, clean, sweet guest. But, you know, I really do love that one thing about this special in particular is when he gets dark, it doesn't last a long time, but it is dark enough to be like, oh, he doesn't have to be filthy to really hit you where it hurts.
Absolutely. That's something that I think you really need to be an effective comedian, is an edge of cynicism, because you need to be able to look at the normal everyday life, things that we all go through or things that you in particular have gone through, and be able to see them through a lens of, I can't believe this bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, can you believe that this is a thing? I think that's one of the many tools in a stand-up's belt, and one of the more important ones. I think, speaking of Tom Papa, I think that he and Tom Papa nail this positive-negative balance so incredibly, where they are speaking cynically or like you said, dark subjects, or actively making fun of people, but they do it in this sweet, sly way that doesn't hurt you and it doesn't make you go, oh, none of that stuff. It's like when Nate Bargatze says, when he's on the phone with his wife and his wife says, we're going to leave at 1:10, our flight's at 1:30. And he said, Laura, I don't know if you even know what an airport is. Like, it is distinctly mean, but it's not like, it's not venomous. It's just an accurately cynical observation of the situation.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, you see, it's weird. I would love for somebody to figure out how to do this verbal calculation to what that means for him internally versus somebody who swears and would be doing the same bit, and how much he manages to express with his choice of words versus somebody who expresses it with just such pure emotion. There's a bit of holdback. He's Southern. He's reserved. And I think the language choice really fits that and allows him, or, you know, it gives him his boundaries. We all have to work within these artistic boundaries, regardless of what we're doing. And I feel like that's one of those that really lends itself, again, to his Southernness and to the way he tells his stories.
Yeah, his delivery and his voice perfectly fit his face, first of all. He's got these big sort of basset hound eyes. And he has an expressionless face. He'll smile at his own jokes sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll crack a smile. But other than that, it's just this, like, just expressionless face. And also something I noticed when I was rewatching in preparation for this podcast was or re-listening rather, because vinyl, was his he doesn't do voices or impressions characters. He doesn't ever put on a character ever. If he's describing somebody else, he'll do it in his own voice and he'll explain to you why they're ridiculous or what's crazy about them. Like that the guy who owned the Serpentarium or whatever he was calling it, the reptile house. You know, this guy has like anti-government propaganda posters on his wall. It's some house full of snakes and crocodiles and stuff, but he's still doing his voice. But his description is so vivid that you get what this guy sounds like without actually hearing him.
Oh yeah, no, it's a rare talent, because I mean, a lot of times people will bring up like Richard Pryor, who is great storyteller but also full character. He goes full into it. And sometimes when I hear it, I'm like, yeah, there's no other way to do this. But then, you know, you make a very good point. This guy's doing, again, story comedy without character comedy. But again, he gives you the perfect opportunity to only see it through his eyes, which is, you know, full of descriptors, full of these just little glimpses into what he was noticing on the day. And it is just as involving.
Yeah. And both his previous special, the one before Tennessee Kid, which was, I can't remember the name of it, but that special and not the special. He was on the stand-ups on Netflix. On that series, and he did a 30-minute set. And at the end, you know, a solid 10-15 minutes of that set was dedicated to the iced coffee with milk story. And then another solid 15-20 minutes of Tennessee Kid was dedicated to the sequel to that story. Both times, he's just getting handed the wrong drink. That is effectively what's happening.
Yeah.
But his own sort of ridiculous inner monologue as to why this might be happening to him and what cosmic forces are aligning or people are conspiring to drive him crazy. So he managed that. That's evidence right there of what an effective storyteller is, and to be a great stand-up comedian, you have to be an effective storyteller. I think unless you're, you know, like Mitch Hedberg or something like that. But even then, those are just like little lovely stories. They're just little bite-sized stories. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a knock against Mitch Hedberg. But no, that was just, I love him, but in general, you have to be a great storyteller, and for to be able to stretch out his own inner mania about this beverage to a sum total of probably 20, 30 minutes of talk time is incredible to me.
When did you first hear or see Nate? Was it the way you're talking about comedy is, and you're in the city, you're in New York City. I assume you've seen a lot of it live. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I've seen, I saw Mike Birbiglia when he was on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Louis C.K., may he rest in peace, before things went down. I saw him at Madison Square Garden back in, like, I don't know, it was like 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to the Cellar a whole bunch of times, and when I've been there, I've had drop-ins with Chris Rock and you know, the big name drop-ins on Fridays and Saturdays. I've had some cool people come through for that. Bumping mics with Dave Attell and what's his name, Jeff, I can't remember his name, but I've seen a lot of stuff live, and again, it's an art form that I'm deeply invested in.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing for me is finding new ones to watch, because I re-listen to stand-up comedy and TV shows, speaking of Frasier, the way most people listen to music.
Sure.
I listen to it repeatedly. I pick up on new things, but also even when I'm not picking up on new things and I can recite everything word for word, it's still a comfort to me. It's familiar. It's like listening to a song that I love. So it's very hard for me to find new comics. And I think that I watched Nate on a whim when Tennessee Kid came out, in the hopes that, you know, maybe I'd find somebody new, smoke a joint and see what happens. And, I was delighted to find, I think the same thing happened with Kyle Kinane, just like, wow, this
yeah.
guy is this guy slays.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. The talk about two opposites, boy, oh boy, in terms
yeah.
of energy, language.
Yeah, controversial subjects. Like Kyle Kinane's entire set on the stand-ups was about the KKK. Like the entire set. Every minute was about the racial divide in America from this guy with like a distinctly, I would say, racist sounding voice, even though he's not, obviously.
Sure.
He's a very sweet guy. Somebody who's not afraid to delve into his own disgusting depths and the dark heart of America, versus Nate Bargatze, who just talks about the silliness of his everyday life.
Yeah, and Nate does this, boy oh boy, does he do, like, man, if somebody were to pitch Nate to me, I think, without me knowing who he was, I think I would innately understand it as dad comedy and then probably not care or tune in. Whereas this is definitely the kind of dad comedy I enjoy. He is a dad, but his perspectives are not these old sitcom dad BS perspectives that we're used to hearing and seeing. He's still, again, I think the darkness is the one thing that always sucks me in. If I can tell there's something underneath that's waiting to come out, that's what I'm waiting for. But he does dad comedy. Again, not dad comedy, but he is a dad. And normally I find those comedians boring. So I'm just, it's remarkable to me that he's this good.
Yeah, it's old hat, the whole dad shtick, the dumb mm-hmm. dad shtick. But that's what he self-admittedly is. He says, yeah. I think, I'm dumb, mm-hmm. a couple times. And and also just, yeah, the whole, he touches on all of his fatherly life and marital life and talks about, I love that line where he says, I've been married since high school. And people say, wow, that's great. And I'm like, you know, it's like I had the same job since high school. I never even applied anywhere else. That's such a hilarious and fresh comparison to draw to a very tired joke of, like, mm-hmm. you know, just I me and my wife, we've been together forever, and obviously we're at each other's throats a little bit. That is as tired a trope as there gets in mm-hmm. even sitcoms. He manages to put a fresh spin on it with a really clever comparison and his own unique viewpoint.
Is this, and feel free, this is fine if that's the case. Do you actually own this one on vinyl?
I do not.
You do not? Okay, absolutely fine. Netflix releases a lot of their stuff on vinyl, so it's like now become a thing.
Which I was thrilled to find out because of you, I was like, does this exist on vinyl? Can I talk about it? Oh my God. So I did order it. It's on the way.
Amazing.
Another thing that I ordered that I found as a result of this is, and I'm sorry to switch subjects all over the place and keep talking about other comedians, but, Kyle Kinane put out this 8-inch with a punk rock band.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you've seen this.
No, I haven't. It's a shame that I don't know about it. Please tell me more.
One side is him talking, telling a story about a skunk that he freed from a coffee can. And the other side, hang on.
Please, yes. I do like how you describe his voice, though. He's a guy where
he goes,
hey, like you don't know if that's I'm going to kill you or I want to hug you. You really don't know. You can't tell.
I mean, he's got such a and also that speaking of his voice, I did not realize he's the voice of Comedy Central. He's the one who says, "You're listening to Comedy Central." That's him.
I know. Isn't that weird? he rarely talks about it smartly. Like that's all people would think about him.
And he really got me through. I can't find the name of this album. I'm sorry, but like he did a collab with a punk
rock
band.
I'm trying to
hunt
it down too.
Yeah, he did a collab with a punk rock band. I think they're from Chicago because that's where he's from. And you know, so one side is just their, I think it's called like Slow Death or something like that. I can't remember what it's called, but
yes, it's called the Slow Death, and I think the other side is Under the Table, if I'm not mistaken.
That's it. Yeah. Slow Death. And so it's half him and half this punk rock band. And I ordered it because I'm like, this is a treasure. I think I had to get it on eBay because I don't think it's being pressed anymore.
But it's old. Okay. Old-ish. Wow.
And I surely appreciate him putting out his compilation album during COVID because I needed some fresh stand-up. Like I was saying, I listened to it repeatedly and I needed something new. So Trampoline in a Ditch was a breath of fresh air.
Ooh, I haven't heard it yet.
That's great. It's classic Kinane, and his bit on urgent care centers is incredible. He says that I went to an urgent care center. There's nothing. Neither of those words reflects what it is. It's not urgent, and they certainly don't care. Like this is perfect line.
You
anyway,
okay?
Sorry, I'll stop going off subject.
No. Please, if it wasn't you doing it, it would be me doing it. Okay, so let's talk about this. I have a similar, and this is gonna be off subject too. But I have a similar compulsion to listen. My show is News Radio. That's the show I listen to on a loop. I think, and then sometimes stand up as well, or musical comedy like Weird Al or what have you. Are you the kind of person who, if they are singing a song or repeating something from a show, is there a hint of impression in there? Do you sort of have to do the voice? Because that's me. I don't assume everybody else is that way.
You might have noticed I threw on a little bit of Kyle Kinane gravel there.
Yeah.
I can actually do a perfect impression of him. Do you want to do it?
Yes, of course I do.
Okay. Do you know the bit where he talks about, imagine if you ever had to switch bodies with, you know, somebody trying to back up an 18-wheeler in New York City, and you just wake up and you're in their body and you're panicking. The next one that he does is Hibachi Chef. So just like imagine you're just napping one day and you wake up and suddenly you are a Hibachi Chef and you're in front of like a whole crowd of people and so he's got this, like, the only reason I can do the impression, I can't just do him talking, I can only do him doing this bit, which is just this panicked, like, fast talking trying to get through being a Hibachi Chef. So like, "Oh, what's your name? Tracy, you want to catch a shrimp? Tracy, I can't." "Oh, happy birthday, Tracy." I hope he hears that. God, I hope he hears that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's freaking delightful. That's, yeah, I mean, there's something, I don't know. Why do you think you do it? I know why I do it. I'm curious why you think you have a tendency to sort of repeat someone's.
And this is an interesting question, considering that Nate Bargatze specifically does not do that. He doesn't put on voices and he doesn't do impressions. I guess because I don't want it to sound, it almost feels like I'm trying to take credit for it. If I do it in my own voice, it almost feels like I'm trying to say it's my, even if I say like, oh, this, you know, so-and-so comedian said this, even if I deliver it in my own voice, I feel like an asshole. I feel like a plagiarist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get that.
That's why I do it. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's perfect, because there would be, I think in my head, it's always been the opposite, where I'm like, oh, I'm so worried that I'm doing somebody else's voice. They're going to think I'm stealing it. But it's immediately homage. It's immediately homage. And there's something like, I can't sing the Beatles without doing a terrible Liverpool singing voice. So I don't know. That's just how it is for me. I'm just always curious. If I like that you do it with comedy, though.
I mean, I appreciate that, and it brings to mind a certain scene from The Office. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. I mean, I've seen it a million times. You're gonna have to tell me which scene it is.
Just there's a scene where I think it's an episode where they're going over just like, you know, what's appropriate and not appropriate in the workplace, and somebody mentions that they were offended by a joke Michael told, of course, and. Somebody asks Kevin to reenact what he said, yeah. And Kevin starts reciting a bit from Chris Rock, and then Michael can't stand that he's butchering it, so he jumps in and like does a terrible Chris Rock impression and drops the N-word in front of everybody, and there are lines not to cross, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a solid bit. All right, I'm going to try and bring us back on track. It was my fault that we kept going. So, but let's get back to Nate. Let's get back to this special. Is there a bit on here that you come back to, or is this in general a special you would just revisit?
I revisit it, the entire thing for sure. I love that I can show it to my parents. Mm-hmm. My dad is pretty cool with profanity, but my mother-in-law is not crazy about it. And these are very like just accessible stories. I can watch this with anybody and they will laugh. And I love showing people stand up because if it makes them laugh, it's almost like I get to relive it all over again. Mm-hmm. If I'm like, I don't know if you've noticed, I'm sure you have because you do, this is your job, but, if I'm watching stand-up comedy alone, I will seldom crack a smile.
Absolutely.
But if I'm watching it with my girlfriend, who is the very same level of stand-up addict as I am, we will just die laughing. And if I watch something that I've seen a million times with somebody new who hasn't seen it, it's making them laugh, I will laugh like it's the first time I won't be able to help it. I'll be in tears.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's... Honestly, to me, when I get that feeling, it's like, oh, what a relief. This is still funny. It's not like it's aged poorly, or it's just that I've gotten old. You know, it's just like, this is good. I've somebody else finds it funny. So it's holding up. It's a nice sign, and it makes you feel young and important again.
And I'm trying to think of the bit, like, because Nate Bargatze in particular, my dad was visiting back in, you know, 2019, back when he could visit. He was visiting, and we had like, I don't know, an hour to kill before he was going to go and meet my girlfriend for the first time. This was the first time he had ever met her. And I was like, oh, I've been watching this stand-up comedian. He's got this bit that you'd love. I'm trying to remember what the bit was, because it was a Tennessee kid. I think it was, it was the dead horse, which... Amazing bit. Mainly because of, like, you know, I think the more simplistic approach to it, and I'm about to compare it to Brian Regan, not because I love Brian Regan. I grew up on Brian Regan. I used to watch his Leather Jacket Comedy Central special like once a week when I was in middle school.
All right.
That's where it started. Is every day after middle school, I would go home and watch Comedy Central, and they would always run Comedy Central Presents in the day before they started running their primetime stuff. Anyway, Brian Regan takes a very kind of surface level approach to the ridiculousness of situations. I don't think that's worse. It's just his approach. It's, you know, this thing's ridiculous, and here's me doing an insane face about it. and voice, and oh God, his faces are amazing.
Oh God, yeah.
But with Nate, like, you know, the whole horses sleep lying down thing, that could be a very simple joke. But instead, he takes it in the direction of, what happens when a horse dies on your property?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to call your friends. You have to tell them. You have to lie to them. You have to tell them, we're getting a divorce. Just come over. Bring your truck and some gloves. And then, oh God, this is when, you know, I recite, stand up and laugh at myself saying somebody else's words. And I do this probably once a day. Your friends pull up and they stop and look at each other and say, I don't think he's getting divorced at all. I think we're here to move that dead horse is what I think. let's make him ask.
but
I will be shocked if we don't touch that dead horse today. Holy shit.
It's so beautifully deadpan. It really is. And it's not that there's no emotion. It's not Bob Newhart deadpan. It's a different kind of, yeah, I don't know. I can't describe
There's a streak of anger in that particular line where I'll be shocked if we don't touch that dead horse today. Even though he delivers it in the same monotone as everything else. But fun fact about that is that, you know, I put on that bit. I scrolled through the Netflix special and be like, oh, wait, it's before this. No, it's after this. Hang on. Just like that asshole moment where you make somebody sit and like, okay, I have to wait to watch this thing I don't want to watch. And I showed that bit to my dad and he was cracking up so hard that we decided to just start it over and watch the whole thing.
Of course.
And it was literally the exact amount of time. And as a result, it was my dad and my brother, and they were coming to meet my girlfriend for the first time. And we went straight from finishing Tennessee Kid to meeting her at a coffee shop. And like the interaction was amazing. Like everybody was great. My girlfriend was really nervous, but you know, they were laughing at her jokes and they were being engaging and asking her questions. Not that they wouldn't normally do that, but there was a joviality to them that I'm positive is because we watched Nate Bargatze before. And so I really credit him with like giving my girlfriend and my dad and my brother a very positive introduction.
That's great. This is the kind of shit that I like. Now, normally my questions are centering around, because normally when we grow up, we're 12 or 13, either we make friends through comedy or we are very private people and develop entirely on our own from the comedy we listen to or watch on our own. But I like hearing when somebody's stand-up comedy helps make a nice actual emotional human connection like that. That's pretty beautiful.
I mean, thank you. And I if I'm being completely honest, I'm really happy I remembered that story right now. I didn't even have that story prepared, which is insane because that's like the best stand-up story I can think of. In my life, at least. So it's really awesome that you asked me that question and led me to that. But that is how I connect with people. Is I tend to show them the TV shows or movies or whatever that I'm into, and it can bring us closer together, or it can also just teach me what they like and don't like. Like,
for sure,
there's nothing worse than the cold sweat that you feel when you put on a stand-up comedy special and they just barely break out in a laugh. That might be the worst feeling in the world, because it is the most embarrassing. You feel like your choice is being judged directly. Your tastes and preferences. There's nothing I hate more, but it's the kind of risk. And that's actually one thing. God, I'm coming to all these realizations. That's one thing that me and my girlfriend bonded over initially, was that we realized that we had this conversation up front where you know, she wanted to share a stand-up special with me, and she was like, I'm really nervous to show it to you. I like, you know, we just started dating. I don't want you to think that. I was like, hey, how about we enter a judgment-free zone? I know the exact feeling you're talking about, and it's the worst feeling in the world, and I would never want to subject you to it. So let's have a rule. If we get 10 minutes in anything and one of us isn't feeling it, let's be honest about it and not be insulted about it. And we've done that since. We've been together for 2 years now, and I really credit that with one of the reasons why we're so strong as a couple, is our ability to, you know.
You're not wrong. I mean, that is an immediate setting of a boundary. Nobody wants to be like, hey, here's my heart, and then the person says, oh, your heart's ugly. Like, that's exactly how it feels. So, why the hell not just, like, establish that nice little boundary? That's good.
Yeah, and the first time because she showed me some stand-up special, I can't remember what it was, but I loved it. I think it was... I think it was Neil Brennan, Three Mics, which is an amazing, another amazing, like, you know, he's really playing with the art form there. And I'm not entirely sure what the impetus is for it, I guess because he wanted to mix very serious stories with very silly jokes. And this was an easier way to do it, but like, it's a very inventive special from a brilliant stand-up. But she showed it to me and that worked. But then later on, I showed her... what's it called, that John Krasinski movie with the aliens?
Something with silence in the title.
Sound of Silence. What the hell? Why do I not know the?
if only
how
I
do I not
intern.
Know the name of that movie?
Oh my god!
That's a really popular movie.
Yeah, it is. It's really famous, and people like it.
This happens to me all the time.
Yep, same here.
All right, I can't move past this. I'm sorry. Hang on.
Silent Place. Is that the name of it?
A Quiet Place. A quiet place.
Why the fuck does this say Silent Place? Fuck you, Google. Sorry.
you got me there. That was a team effort, so I appreciate that. But yeah, I started showing her A Quiet Place, and 10 minutes in, she was like, you know what? I'm going to invoke that rule that we talked about, and I'm going to trust that you're not... Your feelings aren't going to be hurt. This isn't a direct judgment of your character. This is a movie that you wanted to watch that I'm not feeling, and that's okay. And, you know, I was like, you know what? That is okay. And since then, we've been able to just experiment with showing each other things and sharing, you know, stand-up that we love and movies that we love, and it's been an important construct in our relationship.
It's amazing. No, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And, I feel like comedy is, it's even harder than with a movie. Comedy is just like, this is the thing that makes my heart sing. I hope to Christ you don't hate it. It can be really rough. There's a bit on here that I love so much because I'm real sensitive about animal stuff, about death stuff, but he starts off this whole, we had to put down our dog, and immediately you're like, oh fuck, where's this going? Nothing wrong with her, I'm just really busy. So that's how he gets you into it. Like, okay, good. I like you even more, Nate. This is good. Yeah. And then just, he does this whole bit about this beautiful dog and his daughter and death and talking. There's not a moment where I don't think where I'm like, oh, I might well up with emotion, but I'm still there and following along the whole time. That is skillful.
Absolutely. Especially because, again, like we were saying, like, you know, clean as a whistle, mm-hmm. but dark as shit. Like, yeah. just yeah. making a joke about how you killed your dog because you're bored of it. That is a dark joke. But, like, it lands so hard because he's so obviously joking. So I just wanted to touch on comedy that is so dark that I know it's a joke and I'm not, and therefore not offended by it. I'm a fan of a podcast that whose name I don't want to say, and I'm curious if mm-hmm. you know who I'm talking about based on just on that fact that mm-hmm. it's not a name for polite conversation.
Okay, I could guess. I have a few guesses.
It has to do with the male anatomy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had a feeling. Maybe. I've not heard this show, but I knew immediately what you were talking about.
You've probably heard of it because it's notorious mm-hmm. and. It is one of the most blatantly, on its surface level, the most offensive thing ever made. They make jokes about and do impressions of every marginalized and in every hurtful way everyone on the planet, but it's so outrageous and it's done as a character, you know what I mean? Like they're playing a character. This isn't actually the way they feel, and they're saying things to be provocative, and normally that bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But they toe this line that's incredible, and that's the same vibe that I get off of that. You killed my dog because I was bored of her. That's not the way he delivered it, but that's the effect of what he was saying, and it's funny because it's so dark and so absurd that you know he's joking.
Yeah, so. No, very much so. And that, I mean, even character comedy like that can walk a line for me, a very fine line, which is maybe why I prefer to have a nice, sweet Southern boy tell me these jokes. But I totally get what you're saying.
No, I mean, there's definitely comedians, and I won't say who, because I like speaking kindly of people, not tearing them down, even if I don't like them. But there are definitely comedians I can point to who are needlessly provocative. And there's a bright line between what I'm talking about and just being, you know, an asshole. Another comedian I think who walks that line well sometimes steps out of it to the point where I think he's, and I know he's intentionally trying to upset the audience because a big part of his shtick, I'm sorry, I'll say who it is before I go any further, is Chad Daniels.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Chad Daniels, I've seen him live and I've listened to all of his albums and I've realized that he has a shtick where he will say things that are so purposefully meant to get a rise out of the audience that then he can sort of be like, don't get mad. This is why you're ridiculous for finding that offensive, because you just laughed at this. It's like, you know, he sets people up to moan or groan at what he's saying so he can point out why it's ridiculous that they're offended. And it works. It actually works. It's a very interesting dynamic. It's not all he does. It's just one of the tools in his belt. And he says some things that on paper I would find deplorable.
Sure.
But he does have some absolutely brilliant bits, and he's one of the people that I think toes that line very well.
I'm going to take a quick segue very quickly. I asked Absolutely. What your favorite episodes of Frasier were. I asked your folks, not your parents, but your people. I asked your parents. I called up your parents. I am very good at my research. And there
like
was
Sean
one
Evans over here.
There was one particular episode on there. Now I will say I was a fan of Frasier growing up. I am not as familiar with some of these episodes. I'm going to pull up the name of one of them that stood out though to me for a reason. Oh, Taking Liberties. Now, before we get into it, do you remember the plot pretty well?
I remember every line. I could recite that episode for you word for word.
Okay, good. So I'm going to throw something at you you weren't expecting. I'm going to bring on a gentleman named Chris Marcel who wrote that episode.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Hi, Chris. Are you there?
I am here.
I'm here with Andrew Ray, and he's a very big fan of this episode. You said you weren't sure if you could remember anything about it. So, Andrew, why don't you tell him what the episode's about?
Chris, first off, major honor. I don't know if here, I'm going to turn my camera on so I can show you, but I have a Frasier tattoo, I'll have you know.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Wow, that is great.
I got this when I had, at the time, never been to Seattle. So I couldn't say that it was my favorite city or that I was from there or anything.
Yeah. No, I had like I was saying to my writing partner or somebody, like one of the writers on the show, it's like, you know, Frasier's like more people in like the prize demos are watching Frasier now than they did when it was on the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it started as a comfort, you know. Jason and I were talking about just like listening to things that we're familiar to as a salve. And I don't know how long you've been tuning in here, but I watch Frasier the way most people listen to music. I just have it on in the background, or I'm listening to it intently if it's one that I'm particularly fond of. And I always list the matchmaker, or not the matchmaker. that is one of my favorites. That's my favorite starter episode is the matchmaker.
Yes.
That's the one
no,
if I'm getting.
Yeah.
If I'm getting somebody into the show, that's the one to start with. Yeah. But Taking Liberties is one of my favorites because of Victor Garber's character, Ferguson, as I'm sure you can imagine. I actually wrote an angry, drunken rant on Reddit about how furious I was that he didn't be, I mean, Victor Garber's a major actor. I understand that he couldn't become a regular character, but to have a Ferguson as a new recurring character instead of say, Gertrude Moon or something, you know, one of the new regulars, like I sometimes get weak in the knees thinking about how amazing that would have been.
Yes. If we could have afforded him.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I think like a lot of because we were, you know, there were so many people who were fans, actors who were fans of the show that like we got great people. And so, you know, and people could squeeze us in, which is one of the nice things about working on a multicam, because it's not like, well, can you come out to Toronto and do this part? It's more like, can you drive over to Paramount for like. And, you know, work, you know, like rehearse for the morning, two of the days. And, you know, it's like so much less of a commitment that you're able to cast people for like one shots that would be a big, you know, it's just much easier.
And so I mean I'm very happy he could make it, because just having this wisecracking butler that is the image. So I think the challenge here was I was supposed to recite the plot of the episode back to you without any hints.
Well, you know,
so
I had a chance to look at it really fast, because I was like, oh right, I forgot that the whole, you know, it's just like it had a story purpose, you know, with like Niles and Daphne.
This is the biggest flex I've ever heard in my entire life. Is that I've forgotten about your, I forgot I even wrote your favorite episode.
No, when you said taking liberties, I was like, oh, Victor Garber. Because the thing I really remember and the great pleasure of working on Frasier, particularly like Maltese in general, is like, you know, like my writing partner is up in Toronto doing What We Do in the Shadows. They, you know, because of COVID, they don't really go to the stage. They might go to a location. You know, you're just so distanced from the, you know, the actors in a way that, like, in a multi, because they rehearse it like a play, like, you know, like you see them at the table, you see them rehearse it for like day after day. And like being in rehearsal where you can stand like where the cameras are. And like watching just Victor Garber do it, like the first day after the table, like he came in knowing how to do that character. And that's the thing I remember, is just the scene, rehearsing the scene with Martin, where it's like he's flipping the channels for him.
Oh.
You know, and Martin's like, Shark Week, stop. And just like, like just the way he is in that, I was like, oh man, you know.
Perfect.
Like, I'm so lucky.
And-
Yeah.
Yeah, and then your meatloaf sandwich, sir, and your finger.
Exactly. Yeah,
perfect. But I mean, you wrote a perfect character. You can find, it's still up on Reddit. You can find I wrote drunkenly and angrily in the Frasier subreddit. I did say some mean things about some. Now I'm regretting saying that, because I did say some mean things about characters I hope you didn't write.
No, that's fine. I think what I need to do is read it when I'm drunk and angry.
Oh, okay.
Let's just see what happens.
This is the best day of my life. I recall speaking unkindly of Poppy Delafield.
Yes, that was, you know, you take a swing and a miss. You know, it's just like, it has made me much more, you know, there's nothing like having trying something and having it sort of like not fully work out. I think that ought to make one sympathetic. Like, I feel like I'm much less hard on TV shows than I used to be, having worked on, you know, just various shows and worked on shows that like didn't quite work, that almost worked, but like we didn't quite have it. It's just like, you know, it's hard to do.
I can't even imagine. I've been making this YouTube series, and we've definitely had experiments that we've put up that have failed, but it's very easy to bounce back from in the YouTubosphere, and I just can't even imagine with all the work and manpower just the scope of effort that goes into making a show for television. I can't imagine what it would feel like to not see it come to fruition in the way that you imagine. But the fact that you've written this this episode and so much of Frasier is my God, I'm in awe.
I think we were kind of in awe because we started. That was our second season on the show. We worked like the last five seasons on the show, Sam and I, coming straight from News Radio at Jason's on Passion. And
yes,
but it was sort of like, this is amazing, you know, to be here. So it just like we did not take it for granted.
And I admit I pulled up your IMDb page, and I'm seeing that you're credited with Goodnight Seattle. Did you write Goodnight Seattle?
No, I'm in it.
Ah, oh, you're in it.
Because, you know, it's like sort of the internal version of fan service. Like a lot of names of writers are referenced in that finale, and then there's just like one line late in the finale when Harriet Harris is trying to convince Frasier to get plastic surgery. And I come in like looking like I do. I mean, I've looked like I'm 50, you know, since I started losing my hair when I was 25. And so I just come in and say, like, you know, I'm like done next door, Mom. And so, you know, so then Frasier decides to do plastic surgery. So so I'm in it. I get like SAG residuals of, you know, like a dollar.
Hell yeah.
And the other thing was, like, by that time in the shooting the episode, like, all the writers had started drinking. And like, I couldn't, because I like had to do this line, and I was so mad.
I can imagine that things got a little loose around there towards the end.
It was sort of, you know, it was great. But the fun part was, because I had loved that BB character.
Oh yeah.
And I just, like, before Harriet went out, I was like standing next to her, like she's about to do her entrance, or, you know, or like it was about to roll, and I said, like, I'm so happy I'm your son. Like, I've just loved you and doing this character. And so, you know, it was great. But, like, I do occasionally dazzle young writers by saying, well, you know, I'm in it. I've been in Frasier, well, you know.
I'm certainly not a young writer, but I am dazzled. And I don't know if I'm ever going to have an opportunity like this again, I have to ask you, are you working on the reboot?
No, I am not working on the reboot. They haven't really started the reboot. Yeah, I mean, they've announced it, but
what do you think?
Kelsey is doing another show. I think he has another show on the that he's doing with Alec Baldwin. You know, that he's got to shoot that, and then he will be available. So they haven't really geared up to do anything.
I feel like Frasier needs a personal chef who's bald with a thick beard.
I feel like that. I will bring that up, because one of the people who is involved with the reboot is a friend of mine, Chris Harris, who I work with on various shows. And so I will say, you know, if you want, you know, if you want to bring in the Binging with Babish audience, you know, you could
that's
do worse.
Do it. Come on now.
Yeah, exactly.
I will be forever indebted to you if you even suggest that. Thank you. And if they're looking for a plot, here's what I've been thinking. is that Frasier tried to make it as a podcaster, didn't work out, and now he lives with Freddie, like his dad lived with him.
I mean.
Yes, I don't know what the situation is. We pitched it to Sam and I, but one of the things was, one of the conditions was, like, that in thinking about it, was that was something Kelsey really wanted, was to have that relationship with Freddie be one of the things in the show. Because, like, as like he said, it's like, you know, it's like now a different, like, the justification for it was, you know, these are different phases in this life, and they're markedly different. And so that the reboot isn't just rolling it back, you know, like some of these other reboots have been just like, you know, here's the hits.
Yeah, I mean, Frasier was it was a wild new direction for the character from Cheers. Yeah. So it would only make sense for this new one. At first, I was so discouraged when I saw that, you know, none of the original actors or actresses had signed on. And I was like, no, if he's in Chicago now, or if wherever he's ended up, if they're trying to build a new storyline, they should do what they did for Frasier, which is start from scratch. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will be on in some capacity. I don't really know what I won't say more. And of course, one of the other things was, like, you know, we can't ignore, like, the fact that his father died. So that was another thing that they were interested in. It's like, well, how are you going to treat that?
That's another thing you can look out for. I cried when John Mahoney passed away. And I even though I've never met the man, obviously, but he, you know, he was a father figure for me when I was growing up. And that's another thing that you'll find on Reddit is I very, very skillfully photoshopped him into a portrait of the Apollo 11 astronauts because of the episode with Clive when he pretended to be an astronaut and he said that he drove a moon crane. So I photoshopped him when he did, when he passed away. I said, you know, rest in peace and see you amongst the stars or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was my little tribute to him. That's still up there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fantastic.
That's adorable.
Like, I saw something in the, I think it was the Vanity Fair article about Frasier or something that David said that was, I thought was really true and fun to watch, like, in rehearsals and things, because, like, David Hyperis is like, well, you know, I'd been to Yale Drama and Kelsey had been to Juilliard, and, you know, so we had, like, that kind of style. And then John, you know, just coming out of Steppenwolf, and like having been in the real world, like had not coming to acting, like, you know, after having a career, it was such a good contrast because that's what our characters were, you know, that kind of Chicago Steppenwolf were being really direct and our sort of like fancy East Coast training.
Absolutely. And just him and David Hyde Pierce just being such physical comedians. It's not something that most people, when they watch Frasier casually, they realize, because you think of Niles as this very sort of uptight, hardly moving, very stiff guy. But really, yeah, half of his comedy stems from his sheer physicality, and likewise with John Mahoney.
Yeah. I mean, one of the fun things about like being on a especially being on a new show, which was not our experience with Frasier, it's been elsewhere, and like having a show yourself, I think you may have found this, is like you kind of don't fully know what you have until you are making them.
And oh, absolutely.
I think they discovered, it's just like, oh, David is actually really a gifted physical comic, because I don't think that he'd like his other TV shows had really fully you know, played that. And so it was like, somebody just gave us this great tool that we didn't know we had. And that is the fun of discovery.
Absolutely. I don't mean to compare what I do with what you do, because it's so, so very different. And, what you do is so, so huge. I definitely find that as a creator of any kind of media, is that some of my favorite parts come from the discovery of realizing what you have that you didn't even realize, especially I'm an editor by trade mostly, some of my favorite moments come from moments that I didn't even notice when we were shooting or that might have completely passed under the radar, but it turns out that's the magic of filmmaking, really.
Yeah. Do you find that cooking also?
Not as much. if things sort of happen unexpectedly for me, then they tend to end in disaster. But that's just been my experience. With filmmaking, you get to, you know, have a bit more of a what's the word? I'm like, cinema verite, found footage moment. But with cooking, you end up ordering pizza because you screwed up dinner.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's like much harder to go back to one.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, cooking. Especially if you spent like 3 days fermenting something, and you're like, oh, well, right, that was wasted time now.
Yeah, you can't fix it in post either.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I can a little bit, because I always tell people I'm a better editor than I am a cook. That's why the food looks decent.
Right.
But
I'm going to say, first of all, thank you, Chris, for doing this. If the two of you want to be connected, so you can do it now. I don't give a shit. Do however you want. I don't want to interrupt this love fest either, because I'm enjoying it. But I just want to make sure that Andrew, if you have to get going, I can tidy up this episode and let you guys keep talking. I don't give a shit. Whatever's better for you.
I want to also echo your thanks. Thank you so much for coming through. This has been a huge honor and a huge surprise.
Good. I'm glad it worked as a surprise.
I mean, I certainly did not see it coming. They asked what my favorite episodes of Frasier were, and I was like, okay, we're going to talk some Frasier. Great. I did not think that the writer of one of my favorite, my top five episodes of all time, and one that I've often quoted as my very favorite just because of the dynamic between Ferguson and Frasier, and also, like you said, the development of the love story between Niles and Daphne. That was the episode when Niles finally puts his foot down with Mel, and they finally get to go for a walk together, and it's a lovely moment in their long and storied relationship. So thank you for bringing that to a head. We all appreciate it.
It was, well, you know, obviously it was our pleasure. The two small pieces of trivia is Ferguson is named after my uncle, Nip Ferguson. And because I was looking up really fast, I was like, oh, right, I forgot that. Because Sam and I wrote it, and we were assigned to each other freshman year in college and as roommates. And the guy from the opera board, Alan Murchie, was our other roommate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, that was, it's like, that's the fun of doing these things is, you know, name checking people. My wife has a novel out now called Better Luck Next Time, and it's her second novel, and she named all the characters, like at least the first names, after booksellers that she had met and befriended doing the first book. And I was like, well, wow, this is a good way to get them behind you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, at the very least, you're going to sell some extra copies because they're going to want to see their name.
And the other thing, she's like, it's so hard to think of names, which is true. And so it's just so much easier just to take a name.
It is very hard to think of names, and I'm kind of a testament to that. One of the reasons that I named my character, my pseudonym, after Oliver Babish is because, to me, it sounds like a poorly made up name.
Yes.
Which, far be it from me to say anything bad about Aaron Sorkin, but it did sound like he kind of phoned that one in a little bit.
Right, yeah, no, it's just like, you know, like he had just heard like two people, it's just like, you know, is she a babe? No, she's babe-ish.
Yeah, I've gotten, when I was on Rachel Ray, she said, I'm binging with babish. So like, yeah. Well, you're Rachel Ray, I'll let you, you can say that.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yes. And I have to say that, like, I was excited to, it's like, oh, well, you know, like, you know, this isn't just, you know, like some random dude that Jason dug up. And but I am not nearly as excited as my my kids, who are grown ass adults, I might add, that we are talking like this.
Well, first off, let me thank your kids, because any person that I've truly admired that I've met in the past 5 years I've been doing this show, it's thanks to their kids. Like when I met John, yes, Favreau, it's because his kids watched the show. So
yeah,
I please extend my thanks to them.
Oh, of course. No, they were like, you know, and even though they're like grown up, and I think have more of a it's not as hard as to impress them as it used to be. But it's nice to still, like, you know, but it just comes along. Just the opportunities are fewer. So it's nice to have. It's nice to be cool for a day. So I mean, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny because now when we were working on it, of course, like, you know, it was like we were a lot less cool than the Friends people. And I'm sure the Friends people get fawned over, like, you know, all the time. But for us, this is sort of like, this is nice. You know, where it's like to have the second life.
I as much as I can appreciate that, that must be challenging. Friends does not hold. I will give Friends every chance, but it has never impressed me. I rank Frasier higher than, I had a big debate with a friend about this, but I do rank Frasier higher than Seinfeld, which is arguably, you know, the sitcom of our times. But I think that the writing not only is obviously more realistic on Frasier. Anyway, I could go on for years. Right, like, but this.
Like, they're totally like Frasier and Seinfeld are just totally different animals. Yeah. You know, they're just totally getting at different things. And it was like an education for us to come from news radio, which was more of like, what is the like funniest and or dumbest thing that can happen in this situation, to Frasier, where, you know, they were so patient in breaking their stories and so, you know, so like deliberate, so character focused, you know, and then also like thinking of, you know, how to do the comedy and stuff like that. It was like, I felt like I like got, you know, I like teach a writing class now at USC. And I was like, that was my writing school, because I had, you know, I'd never taken a writing class, but like being in these rooms, in these different rooms, and like being around these actors was writing, like, and seeing rehearsals and seeing like stuff that these really great writers had, you know, come out of these great rooms that fails in rehearsal, is like, oh, okay. It just like stuff, you know, you always have to rewrite.
Chris, I love that Frasier is your writing school, and you know my favorite show is news radio, so that implies that my favorite show was your preschool, which is
no,
great.
I think it was, but it was both of them, because like news radio was good, like news radio, Frasier was really good in like that kind of like getting to like what it, like Chris Lloyd, when he was running the Frasier room, would say like, what's the bottom here?
Mm-hmm.
Like what's the character, which is not really much of a question we asked at news radio, but sure. News radio, because it was so comedy centered and so kind of like there's like an energy in it that is like, because you know now like Sam's on Shadows and we write our scripts together, and like that's accessing a different part,
sure,
of like how can we plus this, how can we, you know, what are the little like comedy grace notes, the silliness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's sort of knowing like when to do what,
sure.
And also knowing, because news radio, we wrote them very fast. So I know that you can write something very fast.
Could you ask Paul why there haven't been any podcasters on What We Do in the Shadows who get killed by vampires yet? I just feel like I should bring that up. You know, who have our names from our show.
I don't know. They're shooting season three now.
I know.
So, you
I can't
know,
wait
they,
to see
like,
it.
They have to, you know, the thirst for victims is never ending. They're shooting season three and they've been picked up for season four.
Ooh.
That's amazing. And it's such a clever show. So and Matt good. Berry, I think, is the comedian of our
Matt Berry
our
is so, so good. He's so good. Sam and I had a animated show that we did for Adult Swim that they pulled the plug on halfway through.
Bastards.
It never aired. And, you know, because we never finished the animation. But Matt Berry did a voice for it. Mm. And it was just like, it was so fantastic. And like Matt Berry was always like this, you know, well, you have to be a fan of British comedy. Like he was always like a very like deep cut for mm-hmm. comedy people.
Mm-hmm.
And I now mean, like now he's doing commercials.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I'm so happy about that. Cause like I watched him back when he was like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. And,
oh my God. Oh my, like that just like, I have forced Garth Marenghi's Dark Place on so many people.
Likewise. It doesn't always land.
Yeah.
But when it does.
It doesn't always, great. it does not always land, but it is, you know, I do like, I was just quoting to one of my wife's novelist friends. It's like, I'm one of the few people you'll meet that's written more books than he's read.
It's beautiful.
Oh my God.
That shows beautiful writing.
Yeah, no.
Hey, Chris, have you ever heard Nate Bargatze's humor? That's technically why we were here, which is funny to me because I knew we were doing this whole time. I knew I was going to interrupt it with you in the best way possible. But do you know Nate Bargatze's comedy?
I'm writing it down.
He's very funny.
He's got three specials
on Netflix.
Because
I have to cook
Netflix
dinner tonight, so it's something to watch while I'm actually making
perfect dinner watching.
It
perfect
is.
Dinner
it
watching
really
material.
Is.
Yeah.
Well, if you want, I can connect the two of you, if you'd like. Or again, we can
that.
End the show now, and you guys can keep talking for the rest of the night. I don't care how you guys want to do it.
I should probably go tend to my unwell girlfriend. But,
fair.
I would absolutely love to continue this conversation. I'd love to get you some cookware for your kids as well.
Oh, that would be, you know, more than generous. That would be fantastic. And I will get myself into the garage trying to, you know, before the next earthquake and try to look through my stuff and give you kind of a Jason sized treat.
I mean, when I graduated college, I swore I would never go back to another class, but because I'm terrible at school. But I'll see you next semester, Professor, because I'll be there.
Okay, so very quickly, let me know, why listen to this album or watch this special? If somebody doesn't, for instance, Chris Marshall, let's say somebody doesn't know Nate Bargatze's humor, why give it a listen?
I'd say because he's a sleeper genius, where, you know, you start watching and you're taken in by these kind of one-liners and like, oh, okay, that's a little clever, whatever. And then he just smacks you across the face with just these dead brilliant jokes, like the one we were talking about him having to euthanize his dog. And he follows it up with, she wasn't sick or anything. I'm just really busy right now. Like, so dark and so perfectly delivered. And it just takes you completely by surprise. And as we were saying earlier, he is, more than anything else, a very good storyteller, which is so important for so many different types of comedy. Yeah. And he's able to tell these 20-minute stories about how somebody at Starbucks got his order wrong. And it's one of his most famous bits because he's so effective at delivering it, and he's so incredible at finding the absurdity in it from his own interior monologue. I could go on about this for hours, but just he's like we said earlier, he's a clean comic, which I don't care if comics are clean, but it's almost like doing it on expert mode. It's so impressive to me when you can make me laugh that hard when you're a clean comic.
That's a perfect
So, like, where should I start? Like, what should I be turning on when I go downstairs?
So he did a 30-minute set for this the stand-ups, which is this series on Netflix of just stand-up comedians. Right. That's a good place to start because it's shorter, it's a little more bite-sized, and he does call back to some of those jokes on his longer special, which is the Tennessee Kid, the one that we've been talking about. And he recently did he just put out a new special that it's post-COVID. It's, you know, the audience is socially distanced. He's doing it outside, so he's constantly, like, helicopters are going by, and he has to make jokes about it, and he somehow knocks that out of the park. like, he's very good. But, yeah, I would start with his 30 minutes special on the stand-ups.
Well, I'm also excited because my wife is from Tennessee. So,
oh, there we go.
Yeah, no, it's like this is clicking. The Southerners have to stick together.
This is what I'm told. In a good way.
Yes. No, it's like, it's always, it is, you know, it is so funny. Like, cause, like more than once, like my wife has like run into somebody, you know, from the South, and then it turns out like they know someone in common.
Of course.
Or they're related to somebody, you know, it's just like, I'm just this little Yankee boy.
I want to ask before I let you go one more thing, Andrew, if you would please let people know where they can find you online. Where is your show? What's going on with you?
So I'm mostly on YouTube. You can go to YouTube and search for Babish. I make a show called Binging with Babish, where I recreate foods from movies and television. I make a show called Basics with Babish that just goes over some kitchen basics and how to make some essential dishes, and some other side shoot-off shows like Being with Babish and Stump Sola. We have a new show coming starring Rick Martinez, where he's going to be exploring his new hometown of Mezatlan in Mexico. I have a cookware line that just came out yesterday, Babish cookware line. We're starting with just some knives and some tongs and some measuring cups and bowls. Simple stuff, but really high quality and really great for the price. We wanted to make quality tools that are accessible for anybody, especially people who are just getting their own place or just trying to get started in the kitchen. So that's where you can find me. That's what we're doing.
That's remarkable.
Tongs are severely underrated. Their usefulness of tongs. Everyone talks about knives and nobody talks about tongs, but you need them.
We sell a pair of tongs, and for every product, if you go to Amazon and look at the products, for every product, we made a promo video that was completely improvised. We tried to overproduce it, make it very commercial-like, and they're just buried in Amazon. They're like a little Easter egg. So if you're looking for a good time, go watch those. And the one for the tongs, I'm particularly proud of. Basically, it's just me holding one of the tongs and clicking it rapidly and looking at it like I'm a therapist, like I'm listening to it. And then we added subtitles where it's saying, I'm feeling so lonely, tongs mate for life, and I have no partner. And then, you know, it's a set of two tongs and the other one comes in and they both start making out in front of me and I'm like really uncomfortable. It's a barrel of monkeys.
That's great.
So good.
For some reason, it reminds me of those like Bugs Bunny when he would dress up as a woman.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we were going for. Thank you.
I want to thank Chris. Thank you for coming on as a surprise. I appreciate it.
Chris, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Andrew, thank you.
And thank you, guys.
Please. Yes. And yes, Andrew, thank you very much for doing the show. You're welcome back anytime, of course. I won't shock you again.
Please shock me, and I'll be back soon. If this is the kind of surprises you have in store,
this is the kind of shit I do. Yeah, I'll be. I mean,
even if one of my heroes didn't join us out of nowhere, then this still would have been an absolute pleasure because I love nerding out about stand up, and your appreciation of it and your depth of knowledge of it is an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much.
That's very kind. That was a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Stolen Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!